I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Welcome to you all. Let's start the show today with global trade. I know, it can all be a bit abstract, but this seems pretty clear.
We can't continue to allow China to rape our country, and that's what they're doing. It's the greatest theft in the history of the world.
China was one of President Trump's favorite punching bags on the campaign trail. New figures from the Commerce Department today show the trade deficit with China declining sharply in the month of March, but it was still over $25 billion, and Trump doesn't like that. A U.S. team led by Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin arrived in Beijing today to try to find a better deal for America. Menzi Chin is professor of public affairs and economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. How much does our trade imbalance with China even matter? I mean, Trump seems to think it's existential.
Well, I think, first of all, I should go to the point that, you know, oftentimes people think about trade as sort of a war or something in which one side gains and the other side loses. In general, both sides are gaining, you know, in terms of entire countries. In terms of our trade balance with China, I mean, it's around $400 billion per year. And our total trade deficit with the rest of the world is $600 billion. So you might be tempted to say, well, it's a big, big deal. On the other hand, it's important to note, you know, we count numbers of imports from China as they come from China, but the things that are being sent from China incorporate a lot of content from other countries. So, for instance, the iPhone that's coming from China actually incorporates a lot of value added or content from the U.S. in terms of research and development and software, semiconductor chips made elsewhere within East Asia. So if you took account for that, in fact, the $400 billion trade deficit, if you thought about the value added, it might actually be halved.
Do you understand what Donald Trump's dream solution would be for trade with China?
I don't. I actually don't think that his team understands exactly what the ideal solution is. In some ways, the president's approach, or I should say the administration's overall approach, is kind of scattershot. They're using 19th century tools of tariffs and quotas to try to address, in some ways, 21st century issues. If you think about the biggest sanctions that we placed or are planning to place upon China so far, $50 billion of trade having sanctions on them, tariffs, that's based upon intellectual property rights theft and mistreatment and so forth. And what we're trying to do is apply tariffs to pressure them to stop doing that. Well, it's like sort of pushing at the wrong area. You want to target the problems with intellectual property rights more closely to where the violations are occurring. In some sense, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership was an effort to do that, to strengthen intellectual property rights in favor of the U.S. all around East Asia in sort of a ring fence around China in order to pressure them to come into the community of countries abiding by intellectual property rights protections.
Instead, it seems Trump is issuing these threats to China. Do you think that's more bark than bite? And is that a problem or is it tough negotiating?
It's truly hard to say because the president says various things. His advisors say other things, you know, and it's not clear to me that the administration itself is united in their views. And that's particularly dangerous because, you know, if you think about this all being a game being played by the Chinese against the U.S., you've got to know at a minimum what your own interests are, what you want to get out of these negotiations. And the Chinese, if you want to have a chance of getting at a solution, it'd be helpful for the Chinese to know what the Americans want. And from what I can tell from press accounts, this is a sore spot. They're not clear why this Gang of Seven negotiators have gone to China. What are their objectives? And it may very well be the case that different people in this group have different objectives.
All right. Let's pretend then that they all have clear objectives. Is there a way to shift the trade balance, for example, requiring China to buy more natural gas from the U.S., if that is what they want to do?
Well, the recorded trade balance is $400 billion. It's just very hard for me to see how you can shift $400 billion worth of trade. At the margins, the Chinese government has a tremendous amount of sway on firms, partly because many of the firms are state-owned enterprises, but $100 billion is a big stretch. And so it would have to be, you know, protection, tariffs of some sort on our part. The other thing that they could do is they could let their currency move in a particular way. They could let their currency appreciate, and that might be something that could be of sufficient importance and magnitude to get you $100 billion over some time. $100 billion is a lot, though.
So what if the threat of tariffs actually turns into a reality and we impose billions of dollars worth of tariffs on the Chinese and they do the same to us? What then?
Well, I think what happens is to a certain extent, some trade will be redirected. Some trade will be smuggled to evade the tariffs. So the impact then is going to be minimal. But to the extent that there's a reduction in trade between the U.S. and China, it'll just be the case that trade will flow from different countries at probably a higher price. So the impact will be mostly on, I think, consumers and the producers in America, for instance, who rely upon the cheap Chinese imports. Is there going to be a bigger macroeconomic impact? I don't think so, unless two things happen. One is there's greater uncertainty in the world because of a trade war between two major countries. And if other countries are caught up in the spillover of these tariffs, because, of course, the tariffs don't affect just the U.S. and China. They're going to divert trade to other countries, and those countries will then face pressure to try to protect their own industries. So that is what I think trade economists worry about more than just, you know, the direct impact from U.S.-China sanctioning each other.
And what about Americans' wallets? Does that just mean we're going to end up by paying more for a lot of stuff?
I think for those consumers who consume lots of imported goods, you know, and are shopping at Walmart and so forth, they will see, you know, a disproportionate impact.
Hmm. Yeah. So walking into the room saying we want a better deal, can we trust the Chinese to negotiate a more equal balance to trade, or should there be an assumption that they're just not going to give anything away?
I think the Chinese are reasonable in the following sense, that they're willing to compromise on some issues, but some of their core issues, they're probably unlikely to compromise. They have this Made in China 2025 plan where they want to move up the value chain, you know, move their industries into sort of levels where they've got more value added, where they're producing more technological content. And that is viewed as something that's key and central to their development paradigm. It's unclear to me that they're going to give that up, which is a big deal, in order to get rid of these tariffs. So at the margin, we're going to have some movement. And maybe what could happen is both sides could say, we've achieved some aims, have a face-saving way out of this tit-for-tat retaliation, and move on from there. So it's sort of possible for us to come to a compromise, but I think it relies upon some degree of flexibility and knowing what your objectives are.
Menzi Chen, professor of public affairs and economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, thanks very much for walking us through this. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks very much.